Hello, my name is Andreina.
Hi, my name is Gabriela, and this is Wigs and Candles,
a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wigs and candles.
In this episode, Ammonite. So today's movie is really special. Last fall, we did a small contest where we asked listeners to suggest movies they wanted us to review on the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for your suggestions. We picked a movie from a hat, and this movie, Ammonite, came out. So we thought it would be great to have the person who suggested it on the episode as well.
Yes. So this means we have a very special guest in this episode, our sister-in-law, Maria Cecilia. Maria Cecilia is a doctor and a young mom, and she lives in Vancouver and is, just like us, originally from Venezuela. Welcome, Mace.
Thank you so much, you guys. I'm very excited to talk about the movie. Thank you for inviting me.
Mace, we are so happy you are here. Very, very happy. It took a lot of effort because you are very busy, and we appreciate your time so much. Thank you so much. So before we get into the discussion, can you tell us in one sentence, without giving too much away, why you picked this movie as your suggestion?
I think I picked it because I just watched it. and it was an interesting movie. It was quite slow a little bit, but it was very interested to see the interactions between the two characters, the main characters. And also, it's not very common to see in this type of movies, science women, right? So it was like, okay, now we're talking. So that was the reason behind that.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's excellent. That's such a great mm-hmm. Great reason. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mace, for that. So before we jump into the conversation, Gabby, can you tell us some facts about the movie?
Sure, Nene. My pleasure. Ammonite came out in 2020 and is a romantic drama film based loosely on the life of the British paleontologist Mary Anning. It was written and directed by Francis Lee, and it stars Kate Winslet in the main role as Mary Anning and Saoirse Ronan as Charlotte Murchison. We also see Gemma Jones as Molly Anning, Mary's mother. Just to mention a few accolades for the film, it's just not such an old film. It was nominated for Best Costume Design for the British Academy Awards in 2021. The costume design was made by Michael O'Connor. And it was also nominated as Best LGBTQ Film in the Dorian Awards of 2021. And it won the prize for Best Screen Couple in the Women Film Critics Circle Awards, also in 2021. A little bit of trivia that I found very interesting while researching. The entire, when you look for information about this film, the main actresses and the director, they talk about something very important. And they say that for the character development, they decided to shoot the scenes chronologically. And the intention they had by that was to increase or to deepen the immersion of the characters into the development of the story. And there's also a little bit of trivia that might be interesting for all period film lovers. As I mentioned, we see Gemma Jones, who is playing the mother of Kate Winslet. And this is the second time this actress plays the role of the mother of Kate Winslet in a film. She has been also in Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility, the version of 1995 by Ang Lee, where she plays Mrs. Dashwood, the mother of Marianne Dashwood. So I found that kind of cute. Yes, so that's pretty much the most important facts about the film. How about a short summary of the plot, Nene?
Thank you so much for those facts, Gabby. Always so interesting to hear a little bit of the trivia. So I'm going to try to summarize the plot of the movie as briefly as I can, as I always try to do. So here it goes. Ammonite tells the story of a brief period in Mary Anning's life. Already an established and respected paleontologist, when the movie starts, the story focuses on a fictionalized romance between Mary and a young married woman, Charlotte, who's left behind by her husband in the care of Mary. Together, Mary and Charlotte get to know each other among the waves, the rocks, the fossils, and the ammonites. So that's a small...
That was a very romantic summary.
Well, what else you want me to say? I mean, it's a romantic movie.
It was beautiful.
I am a writer, after all, or trying to be. All right. Gabby, I think before we start, we should give a little bit of information on Mary Anning, given that she's a real historical character, but one that many people might not have heard of. I hadn't heard of her, so I was really curious about the details of her life. So I was looking in Wikipedia. that's as far as I went. And I'm going to read from the introduction of her biography, just so that we have an idea who we're talking about in this movie. So Mary Anning was born in 1799, and she died quite young in March 1847. She was an English fossil collector, dealer, and paleontologist who became known around the world for the discoveries she made in Jurassic marine fossil beds in the cliffs along the English Channel at Lyme Regis in the county of Dorset in southwest England. Anning's findings contributed to changes in scientific thinking about prehistoric life and the history of the Earth.
Thank you for that, Nene. I think that was a very nice...
It's taken from Wikipedia, so quote-unquote, so it's not, these are not my words.
Yes, it's good. But it's a background for the story. Yeah,
I also thought that it was important before we jump into the discussion to know what is an ammonite, because, again, I didn't know what an ammonite was. So do you know what is an ammonite?
Well, I didn't know. Do you know, Marce? Or did you know before you watched the film?
That the name of that thing was an ammonite, but I knew that existed. Those were like the cockroaches of like the dinosaurs.
You were doing better than I think you were doing better than Gabby and I. Okay, so I looked up the definition so we can know what we're talking about. So this is the definition from the Cambridge Dictionary. So ammonite is a noun from geology, and it describes an extinct sea creature, often found as a fossil, with a flat spiral shell. So essentially, these are the fossils of an extinct sea creature. I had no idea. So there we go. So this is the name of the movie, and is essentially the name of this. This is a scientific term, essentially. All right.
Very well. Thank you for that, Nene. Okay, so I guess we're all set to start our discussion. And I would like to give you first like an impulse. I found a quote while researching. I found a quote that I found very interesting by Francis Lee, the writer and director of the film. And it says, "Above all, I wanted to make sure I gave dignity and respect to elevate Mary Anning to the status she should have had when she was alive." So that's what the director of the film said in one interview. And I am very curious to hear from both of you. Do you think that he succeeded on this while making this film? Nene, would you like to start, or maybe our guests would like to start?
I can start. Thank you so much for that question, Gabby, and for that quote. We were laughing a little bit when you sent me the script because we questioned this quote a little bit. I questioned it a little bit. He said he wanted to give dignity and respect to elevate Mary Anning to the status she should have had when she was alive. And I have mixed feelings about this. One, finally, we have a proper feature film on this character. So for that, I applaud Frances Lee. Because I was looking around and there were a lot of kind of small documentaries, small clips. Like if you go to YouTube, you're going to find a few educational videos, kind of for children or for general public. So I think this is the first feature film on her, which I think is already a very good thing, obviously, telling stories that haven't been told. But on the other hand, I'm not sure if he succeeded in... And, you know, in giving dignity and respect to elevate Mary Anning to the status she should have had. And we can get into this much more during the discussion. I think the movie does show her scientific work to a great extent. It shows it. But I'm not sure if he's completely successful in elevating her to the status that she should have had when she was alive, as he said. So I have a little bit of mixed feelings on this, and obviously we're going to get into why later.
And for me, I don't think he succeeded. No, he didn't. Because depends on the perspective that it's a he, right? Frances, I'm guessing, right?
Yes, it's a male director.
He was trying to portray her. So if he was trying to portray her as the personal life, yeah, he quite succeeded. But if he was trying to elevate her dignity as a science woman, no, absolutely not. Because you can see in the actual film that the men, she was not... offering during the museums, like the I don't know what is the name of it, like when they pick the pieces, her name was not even there, kind of thing. So I think on that end he didn't, but yeah, that was it depends on how do you want to see or what perspective he was trying to portray it on the movie. I think if it's the personal life, sure. But yeah, that was it. That's my opinion about it.
Masen, I have to totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. Maybe he was too ambitious when he said this, you know, when he gave this statement that he wanted to elevate Mary Anning to some dignity that she didn't get while she was alive. Maybe he was too ambitious, and so the expectations would be maybe too high on what he was planning to do with the film. On the other hand, I think when you don't know anything about Mary Anning and you see this film, you get the impression of a woman living in poverty, being ignored, being mostly, I don't know.
Yeah.
Shadowed, grayed out from society. And also using very graphic things like dirt.
Everything was gray.
For me,
if you see.
This might be a silly comment. I don't know. It was gray. And she was always like, you know, cleaning her hands on her apron, and her clothing was always dirty. So it doesn't mean that she has to be clean to be dignifying. Of course not. But the way she did it and the way they closed up on Sundin into this gesture of her hands being dirty and just cleaning them on the skirt, it's not for me a symbolism of I am elevating to
yeah
to something.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Gary, that's so, yeah, I love both of your perspective because I have to say, I also agree. And I agree with what Mas worded so perfectly, depending on the perspective that he wanted to provide on this film. If he wanted to portray the personal life of Mary Anning, yes, he succeeded. It's very much about her, about a personal episode in her life, not so much about her scientific work. So for me, it's true. It's like if the point was to portray her scientific achievements, yeah, it does show her working. And I don't have an issue with the cleaning of the apron, all that. That was kind of like the nature of the work. It was very dirty work. And then I guess as we move forward, we can talk about the symbolism of different things. But I agree with both of you. I don't think he yeah. succeeded in doing this. He succeeded in telling a story, but not necessarily a story that about science, mm-hmm. not necessarily a story about scientific achievement or how she was, yeah. You know, erased from history, all of that. And, you know, that is more like a side story to the personal story. And there's nothing wrong with telling this. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with telling a personal story.
Absolutely. As I said, maybe, exactly, maybe he put up his expectations too high. He aimed too high. And just again, coming to the dirty hands on the apron, please do not get me wrong. I completely bow myself in front of people who work very hard, who work with their hands, and grab work with their hands, you know, and I think we have talked in our series of podcasts about many of the working people, of the roles of working people in many fields, mm-hmm. being farmers, mm-hmm. being milkmaids, being chaperones, whatever, servants. And we love those roles. Yeah, we know these hands-on functions of the period. But again, I think in this film, how he did it, it didn't convey the message that he wanted to convey. If he wanted to say, okay, she was like really hands-on, tough, and you know, she didn't mind, it came kind of distorted. It came like, yeah. she was like, you know. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Not really loving herself, not really caring for herself, you know? Not really giving the respect that she deserved herself. She was always walking around dirty, and
probably that.
Maybe that's what maybe irritated me.
Now that you mentioned that, now I'm thinking about the dirty hands and stuff. I might think that it is funny because I'm guessing that was the only way for women to have a position in their science world, right? So you have to do your own thing. You have to like even work harder to have a dignified title in that community, you know? So I'm guessing that he if you think about it, yeah, kind of, but still.
Yeah,
no.
I think, okay, let's stay on this topic because I think I'm looking at the next topics and we don't want to touch on this again. So I think I need to say what I need to say right now. Yeah. What history tell us, so when we read her biography, she's definitely contributed to the field. A lot of her discoveries, a lot of the pieces that she cleaned up, because the work was to work among the rocks, find the ammonites and other minerals and clean them and find the fossils, clean them, put them together and present them. And she did the field work necessary for the scientists because she didn't have any formal training. She was a hands-on scientist, I guess. She was doing the field work, essentially, finding these, cleaning them, the pieces. Then the scientists will take, they were the scientists, of course, which means they were all men, will then take the fossils and the pieces, the ammonite that she uncovered, mm-hmm. and write the papers and write the sciences, the science. She contributed to some of these papers, but she was never mentioned. So if you read her biography, she was very much erased mm-hmm. from the scientific papers that she contributed to. I think she's mentioned in one scientific paper. this might be wrong, but I think her work was taken from her, purchased, and then everybody had took the credit for the very delicate work that she had to do, because she could only do this field work. That's as far as she could do. And it's interesting that in the movie they show that this is very like this is the first step in this scientific work, which is the cleaning up and the discovery and finding what is worth excavating. I mean, it takes a night. She did that from age 12, essentially. She did this work her entire life. But she was not allowed to then contribute to the writing, to the science, to have her voice. And there's a scene where they bring in this huge fossil to the museum, and you know, it had her name on it. And of course they took the tag off and they put, you know, the person who purchased it. And the other important piece of this is that she was making a living from her work. She had a store which was owned by her father before. And when her father died, she kept the store running. And this was her living as well. She could make a living from this. So there's a lot of, I think the dirt is very much the symbolism is that this was hands-on work, first of all, and just the nature of the work. You had to, it was a physically demanding job.
Nene,
like she even,
and that's fine. And that's fine. I mean, I think it's great that they show it, because I wouldn't have known how they find ammonites. I wouldn't have known that. Yeah. So I think it's great that they showed it. But the entire body language of this woman in this context doesn't make you feel like, wow, she's like really like she loves what she's doing, and she has a great mind, and she doesn't mind getting her hands dirty. It has another touch. It has like a touch of like she looked kind of clumsy, kind of demotivated, kind of, you know, bitter. And then like, you know, how she then walked and she cleaned, but as if she also didn't value the entire thing as much
there
as
was
maybe.
No option.
Yeah.
Probably
maybe she had no option, of course. This is also,
there was no option for her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's how that those times were, mm-hmm. right? You had the option or either getting married or working your family business. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that was her thing. Probably she liked it. I don't know. Nobody knows. But you could actually see on the movie that she was not enjoying that job.
What do you say?
I see now what you mean. So both of you are saying the portrayal of her work is not a joyful, is not a joyful experience for her. She's
no.
Yeah.
No. But on the other hand, if you see the whole movie, you can actually see that Mary became alive after knowing the other girl. So probably that was a good contrast, that she was like, I'm not having it. This is a boring life. Everything is great. It's blah. But now, after meeting that girl, she was like, okay, now I have an interaction with another human.
This is
great.
This is a good topic.
Not just with phones and dirt.
It's maybe a good transition for our next topic.
Yeah. If you see a bored person that is right now in our times, that is just like going to work and work and work, not having interaction with anybody, you're going to see the change in the personality of that person. That person is going to become alive. It's going to start talking and going to, I don't know, musicals or whatever. So probably that was the other option of this director. She was like Debbie Downer and now she's not. I don't know.
It's a great observation.
I love that very much.
The advocate is devil's here.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Nobody's size.
No, I love that very much, because Oof, there's so much to talk about here. You know, the concept of the scientist, the concept of the genius, the concept of work, the concept of what brings joy to people and what would bring joy to somebody then and now. It's very interesting that she's not shown to be any kind of intellectual or scientifically minded person. She's just a very hardworking, knowledgeable person. She knew what she was doing. She was proud of her work, but it was not her the entirety of her life. Like, and I really wonder, I think if we go back to the question, if he was trying to elevate her status, I think he did the opposite. Because it doesn't show the like her spirit was alive when she was doing the work. It doesn't show that her spirit was consumed by this. And probably, I will say, that's probably wrong. She probably, in real life, I'm just going to go on a limb here and assume, I'm thinking that she probably did enjoy this work very much, and the movie doesn't show it.
And even if she didn't, we will never know this, but it would have been a nice touch to portray her being passionate and being fascinated by ammonites. But for me, it was not the case.
I mean, there's also a flash of this, but it was not the whole movie when this guy comes and he was trying to ask her to just show her work. She was like, yeah, you do this and you do that. But it was very mechanic, you know, like this is how you do it. She knew the steps and she knew everything, but it was just like that. Very, very mechanic.
That's a great definition. I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
And also, I want to point out that he also did a comparison between a science woman and a medic or a doctor there. So the doctor was like very well dressed, very well spoken, very outgoing, and she was not.
So yeah, exactly.
Another point down.
Exactly. So this entire image that he created for this woman, entire image
around her,
for me, it didn't fit to this, okay, let's make her story like her winning story. You know, if you want to tell the story of this woman, and let's make it look good for history with this film, this didn't work for me.
Wow. We could go on and on about this. This is really fascinating, because it's about intent. It's about intent in the script writing, intent in the storytelling, and also what does it mean to be a scientist? What are our ideas of what a scientist looks like? Are we imposing our own ideas on what a scientist should look like, and so on and on and on, right? So much. But anyway, should I do this one?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So now that we have touched on this question, let's move on to the next topic. And I love how Gabby wrote this. When I read it, I actually laughed out loud. When I read the script, I laughed out loud. So I'm going to quote how Gabby wrote it. So the topic of discussion is this, quote, "Ugh, men directing love stories between women," end quote. So notice the, "Ugh." So this is a movie about two women falling in love, having a relationship, and it's a story that we very much enjoy, right? We want to see all these kinds of stories all the time, but it's a movie directed by a man. Curiously enough, there's a scene in this movie that we're going to touch, I'm sure. There's a love scene in this movie that we're going to touch on a lot during this segment. And this love scene, curiously enough, as Gabby wrote here in the script, was choreographed by Kate Winslet. She took the lead on that. So the movie, as we have already discussed quite a bit. It's not exactly a biographical depiction of Mary Anning's life. There is very little known about her. And of course, among these things, we don't know her sexual preferences. We don't know if she had a male lover, a female lover. We don't know. In this movie, she's portrayed as having this passionate love affair with a young, beautiful woman. Okay, so I'm throwing it both of you. What do you think about men directing love stories between women? Who wants to start?
Gabby, go.
Oh my gosh. This is a tricky question because we have talked about two other films in our series of podcasts where they also portray a gay relationship, a love story between two women. We have spoken about Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which was amazing in our view, and where we found the love relationship incredibly touching and intimate and leveled. And we have also spoken about the film The Handmaiden, where we also found the relationship between the two main characters, these two women, also incredibly sharp and smart. And one film was directed by a woman and the other film was directed by a man. So with this little knowledge, I cannot generalize that this film being directed by a man was like, I don't know, on the wrong path to do this, to do a love story, of same-sex love story justice. So I'm going to have to move my argumentation in another direction. I think the director used too many cliches to develop the love story. He based his entire portrayal of this relationship on way too many cliches. And while I was watching the film, I just kept rolling my eyes. And I was really struggling, and I was really wondering, can I really just say, okay, because he's a man, he didn't know how to do it? And I said, I have to back away from that argument because we know that there's possibilities of portraying a beautiful same-sex love story from the other sex, you know? So I'm still struggling to find out why didn't it click? Why didn't it spark the flame like it has worked in other stories, in other films? For me, there were too many cliches, too many, you know, camera movements of the poor, dirty Kate Winslet playing Mary, and the poor, dirty Mary Anning sitting on the table, and then the camera moves away and shoots standing Charlotte Murchison, played by Saoirse Ronan, being clean, shiny, rich, you know, ladylike, you know, too many cliches in that, you know, on that level. The holding of the hand, kissing on the sunset, you know, and things that could have been, that could have added value. But for me, they just came through the screen as pure cliches. That's my view. I'm very curious to hear your opinion on this. I don't know, Masi, would you make us the honor and tell us what you think?
So I have to be blunt. So
we love bluntness.
My perspective on his view of this couple, it was not about love. It was more about like boredom, I would say. Not on Mary's side. It was more on the Charlotte's side. So you can see that she was there because she had a mental breakdown, right? And her marriage probably was not in a good place. So my first perspective was like, this girl is bored. And she found this woman who is taking care of her and treating her like a normal human being or somebody else that actually cares about her. It was not about love. So that was my point of view. And I was like, you could have done better. I mean, if you want to show the love between a couple, that was not the best, way to show it. I think he could have easily take away the mental health part if he wanted to portray the love between them. That was my perspective, that it was like a bored girl, the other one, she was bored with her job, and that was it. And they met each other. I was like, okay. But love between them, I don't think so. It was more about the passionate, about the sensations, not about the love. That was my
point. I love that observation. I'm curious not to see Nene's.
And about the men perspective, I would say that men, they have a fantasy of how we behave as women. So I'm guessing that he tried to do that or recreate that fantasy about that kind of love. But we have to understand how men's brain works. They're more physical. They're not more like mental like we are. So if two women, they get together because of love, that is not going to go like that, like the he showed. I don't know. That's my point of view. Like, you have to be in our position and you have to think like us in order for us to, oh, this is how it goes, right? Or this is how it should go. I don't know. That's my point.
Your turn, Nene.
Should I go?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I have like 10 more comments
this. Oh, God. Yeah, damn. I'm terrible. I'm terrible at this because my world is gray. Never black and white. I have so many shades of gray here. Let's go one thing at a time. Men directing love stories between women. I immediately thought about the movie Blue is the Warmest Color, which is a spectacular French film from 2013. It's not a period film, but it's a LGBTQ plus story. And it has a super long sex scene between the two girls. It's hot. There's no denying. The scene is pretty hot. Regardless of your gender orientation, sexual orientation. Is wonderful. We later learned that when they were filming this scene, which was long and graphic, super long and graphic, bordering on porn, we later learned that the actresses felt actually quite uncomfortable with the filmmaker and this whole scene, which very much complicates how you watch it. So if you felt uncomfortable before watching it, after you learn how it was done, you feel even more uncomfortable. So that's one thing. So I was watching this movie, and there's a few scenes, like Gabby said, a lot of building up in their intimacy, like touches, looks, and those are the cliches. Gabby and I were texting each other the cliches of, oh my God, the hand on the shoulder. Oh my God, the breath when she looked at her. Oh my God, the touch on the skirt. And, you know, all the little things that were building up. And then we have a love scene that is quite, it shows a sex act, kind of, you know, again, just before porn, right? Just, yeah, because porn has some rules, like you show the money shot, right? Where here you don't have the money shot, but almost. And I was like, oh, it reminded me of Blue is the Warmest Color. And I thought, oh my God, how uncomfortable this has been. I mean, is this necessary? I start to have all kinds of complicated feelings about the scene. Like, I had a lot of complicated feelings about the scene. And don't get me wrong, again, I'm just going to say it's pretty hot. It's you know, depending on how you're feeling at that moment, it's not bad. However, I felt I had complicated feelings about it. But then Gabby told me, you know what, Nene? Francis Lee is a LGBTQ plus director. He himself is gay. And I was like, oh, no, this complicates everything.
And as we just mentioned, Kate Winslet choreographed the sex scene.
So
why didn't it work?
Why didn't it work? Yeah, because in the end, for me, it didn't work. For me, in the end, it didn't add to the story. Because for me, it has to add to the story. And for me, it didn't. It didn't add to the story. It's like a well film. It's very rough. It's like in your face, right? It's not a bad scene, but did it add? Did it help to give dignity? I'm going to go back to his quote. Did it help to give dignity and respect to elevate Mary Anning to the status she should have had when she was alive? No, I didn't need to see Mary Anning having sex, like graphic sex with another woman for her to be elevated as a scientist. I'm sorry, Francis Lee. That was not the way to elevate her scientific work.
Nene, and
I'm sorry, I'm ranting.
And I guess the worst, and not the worst, let's say, and I think the thing that hurts the most in that respect is just what Masa mentioned. You didn't feel love. You didn't, as a viewer, you didn't get one glimpse of the wave of love that apparently they were having, because for me it didn't work. For me, the entire relationship was completely puzzling. I made two notes while watching the film. First of all, the Charlotte, who becomes Mary Anning's lover, she is completely depressed. As you mentioned, Masa, she had a mental breakdown or whatever, and she was like lethargic and completely inactive and, yeah, very, very down, very depressed. And then she falls sick. And when she wakes up, suddenly, after this fever, she's completely
fine.
She's fine. And they made it also kind of too, yeah, they played again with too much with cliches. Up until that moment, up until the moment when she falls sick, she's wearing very dark clothing all the time. She's wearing only black. And then she wakes up from this fever in the house of Mary Anning, and she wears a bright dress. So it was like too much of an obvious, not necessary contrast, and nothing that you as a viewer can kind of comprehend. What did she come from to kind of, she just wakes up from the fever and now she's like, I feel like new and I forgot about my mental block. And the other thing that I wrote down.
Good medication that they gave.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting.
Oral sex.
Up until the moment she didn't have any.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
She wasn't that, you know, brightened up until that moment. And the other thing that made me disbelieve the power of that relationship, if there was a power at all, was they didn't go into detail. Why did Charlotte find Mary Anning attractive, fascinating? And I think what you said, Masa, it's exactly the perfect explanation. She didn't find her attractive or whatever. She was just bored because there was nothing attractive about Mary Anning.
She was bored.
Mary Anning was gray, old, not very attractive. And I love Kate Winslet. Please don't get me wrong. I think Kate Winslet is an amazing woman and an amazing actress. But I don't know what Charlotte found in Mary Anning. So it makes the relationship very not plausible.
Okay, I'm gonna. Can I add a third perspective to this again? I am more. I'm gonna choose to be a little bit more generous with the filmmaker and with the everybody who work on this movie. It didn't quite work in terms of the love story. Like it didn't. And all of the things that you have said make a lot of sense. For example, what Gabby said, that why was Charlotte attracted to Mary? There's no clear reason. Was it love? Was it lust? I'm going to add a more nuanced perspective here. I'm okay with a story that is not about love. I'm fine with that. If it's a story about lust and the need for physical touch, the need for just another human being on that respect, I'm okay. That is valid too. Not all relationships are about love. There are relationships that are about that physical touch, that physical contact. We learned that Charlotte is actually suffering from severe depression because she has lost a baby. So she's very depressed. And actually, I like the portrayal of her depression in the movie. I appreciated that. And there's a key moment when she transitions, when she gets better from her illness, like physical illness, she gets better. And there's a moment where she goes and starts to help out around the house. And Mary tells her, go grab some coal outside. And she goes and grabs the coal. And then when she comes back, she falls. And she has like a revelation, just like a breakthrough in that moment where she starts laughing and then she starts crying right away. And that's the first moment that they become close physically, because Mary grabs her and very gently kind of holds her like a mom, like a mother, because she's sobbing. And that's the moment when they, you know, two women very alone in their own worlds, very, very alone, physically, emotionally alone, both of them, find some solace in each other. And I understand that. I understand that it cannot be, it's not always about love. It's not always about attraction, but about a need for a temporary need, a momentary need for that another human being, touch, human touch, and you know, lust. It's fine. I don't have an issue with that. I do have an issue with the scene. I don't think it was necessary or well done. It was well done, but it's not necessary. But I just wanted to add that nuance there to it's fine. I don't have any problem. This is a story about loss.
But then it should be clear. But this was misdirecting. Yeah. It was not clear that it was not about love.
There is an incoherence on the history, right? On the whole story. Or either you're in love and you have the cliches, or you have just the lust and all the sex scene.
Exactly, so, without cliches. Exactly.
Like without the cliches. Yeah. No hand rolling, just go. Go.
Yeah.
Military.
Yeah. Right. Can we talk about, I absolutely love this, and the choice of word, the incoherence. Yeah, it is not a coherent script. Mm-hmm. And I think we have been saying this from the beginning. What kind of story he wanted to tell is incoherent, in the sense that he wanted to either show the scientific Mary or the personal Mary. There was not a mix of the two. He didn't succeed in telling a coherent story that encompasses both. Then we move to the love story. Is it a love story? Is it a companionship story? It's mm-hmm. a lost story. We don't know. There's no clear. So again, there's a incoherence in the, or misdirection on, or lack of clarity on what kind of story he wanted to tell. But can we talk about the cliches?
Yes, please. I wrote many down.
Okay, go ahead.
The first cliche I wrote down. Why did, when Charlotte got sick, she fell sick at Mary Anning's house. She fell sick. So by any wonder of the story of the moment, they decided to keep Charlotte in Mary Anning's house, to put her in that house. This didn't make any sense. This was a wealthy woman. She had a hotel room paid for. Why didn't they take her to the hotel? So I think this is like the first, like, oh my gosh, and then suddenly this attractive woman comes into the house of the ugly duckling, into, you know, falls onto her DoorDash.
I'm guessing because the husband, he paid Mary to be the, like, a friend. So my only thought when I saw the scene, I was like, if I was Mary, I would be like, I have to take care of this girl, otherwise I'm going to be done, you know? Like, no money for me, there is nothing. So I better take care of her.
But it wasn't her choice.
While I'm watching her.
It wasn't even her choice.
What was it? I mean, it was not her choice, but it was Mary's choice to receive that money from the husband, you know? Mm-hmm. Because she was bad, in a bad place, so she needed to go for walks, and Mary was the
totally
one.
Totally, but it was not her choice to keep Charlotte at her place. They didn't have a bed for Mary, and that's the second cliche that I wrote down. Obviously, there was only one bed, so they had to share the bed at some point. I mean, come on, go ahead.
You have to preserve the heat.
This is a fanfic trope.
Go ahead.
You had to do it.
This is a fan fiction trope. Oh, there's only one bed. Oh, what can we do? You have to sleep on the same bed. You have to share the bed. Oh, shoot.
And another cliche. It was kind of winter, fall. So you have to preserve heat somehow. Somehow.
You have to keep each other warm.
You have to rub each other's hands and backs.
Anna, your cliche.
Oh, there were so many cliches. The look across the room, the touch on the shoulder. This is a cliche of, this is not a lesbian love story cliche. This is a period movie cliche that we laugh a lot when Charlotte gets sick and she's really, really sick. I mean, she could get pneumonia. I think she probably had like at the beginning of a pneumonia. I don't know, something really severe. And she's sweating and she has a fever. And of course, Mary comes in and she comes with the wet cloth. She puts this on Charlotte's head. She puts a wet cloth and on her head. I was laughing.
Well, I love that one.
Wait, what about the robbing? What about the robbing thing?
Come on, Masi, bring it on.
Oh my god. I was like, dude. Yeah, like, and she was like hesitant robbing the chest. Like,
let's put the Masses cliche into context. So Mary goes to an older friend who has this beautiful garden as a botanist, and she buys a salve, like a lotion, a salve that will help Charlotte. And of course, she has to put this on her chest. It's vapor rub. It was that time.
It was vapor rub,
yeah. And she had to rub it on her chest and then her back, gently and hotly.
Okay, I have another cliche.
She had to warm it up.
Yes. I have another cliche.
And right after that, she woke up. She was fine.
And started wearing white.
That salve might have had something more.
Oh my god.
Tyler or something.
It was the erotic rubbing of the vapor rub.
Wait, another one. I'm gonna add another one. She laying down on the other side and Mary drawing her.
You took away my next cliche.
Titanic already they won.
Totally. That would have been my next cliche. Ago. Yes.
Yes. Come on.
The drawing of her back. Do we need that? No.
Come on.
No.
Jack already did it.
Jack told me like your French girl.
And I wrote something else. And I don't know if this is a cliche, if it falls into this category. But I also found it, as I said, I've been struggling with this, with the portrayal of the character of Mary Anning. They portrayed Mary Anning as being the boyish, disheveled, careless part of the relationship. And Charlotte, the shiny, tidy, ladylike one.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they be
like that?
Yeah. And as I said, it doesn't add. Yeah.
No. And actually, it is funny that you're mentioning that because it looks like, in order for you to be a woman and a scientist, you have to be
boyish.
A boy kind of a girl. Mm-hmm. Like, no.
Mm-hmm. No. Brilliant.
She could have
brilliant
been.
Brilliant, yeah. Master.
Not on my watch, girl.
She was not feminine.
Not on my watch. Yeah, there's so many scenes, actually, Master, that's such a brilliant point. There's so many details about the portrayal of Mary Anning when she's doing her work that are so unglamorous, which I understand. It's like they want to portray the reality of this work that was really hard, but she's peeing on the rocks. How many Kate Winslet peeing scenes we need? She's done it in other movies. And like, oh, you have done it before. Do you want to do it for this one too? There she is, peeing on the rocks. Do we need that to elevate the dignity and respect of Mary Anning?
I think you've said it all.
No. No. Okay. So we do have an issue with all the clichés in this story. I think we have gone quite in depth here. We could go on and on, and it will be amazing if after listening to this episode, you let us know of your most detested or just funny cliches that you find in lesbian period film or period films. Let us know. So, Gabby, should we now move on to our Wicks and Candles quiz?
I would love to, Nene, and we have to introduce Masset into our quiz, how it works.
Yes. So this is a new segment that we introduced on season 3 of the podcast. So it's the first season. And is the quiz consists of 4 questions that each of us is are going to respond. So the first question in the quiz is, what is your sweaty wig? This means one thing you didn't like about the movie. So let's start. And let's start with Masse, as she's our guest. What is your sweaty wig? One thing you didn't like about the movie?
So many. let me just pick one. I would say the relationship between Mary and Charlotte, I didn't like it. There was no love. I didn't like that part. And... what else? And all the cliches like we were talking about.
Thank you very much, Masse, for that. Now, Gabby, what is your sweaty wig?
Okay.
Or Ammonite?
It won't come as a surprise. I go along with Masse and I say, sadly, all the cliches that were built in, they didn't quite work. They didn't add value to the story. So I'm going to go for that. That's my sweaty wig wrapped up in one. Okay, Nene, now is your chance.
Thank you so much, both of you, for your sweaty wigs. My sweaty wig, we have been actually talking about it, the whole discussion. I just called it The Point. What is the point of this movie? I don't understand it, or the direction that the filmmaker chose to go with in the script. The ending. I don't understand it. It's not coherent to me. So essentially, it's just the whole point, the whole perspective of the movie. That's my sweaty wig. I think it was confused. It was a confused perspective. And so I said, my sweaty wig is The Point. What is the point of this movie? And I don't get it.
Yeah. Okay. Some kind of mistake in the script from the beginning, huh?
Yeah, I think so. Not so much the script, because there's very good dialogues and there's very the good pace. It's like a perfectly watchable movie, but overall the idea, the beginning to the end, I think the motivation, intent was lost, maybe even from the beginning. I don't know, but that was my sweaty wig. All right, let's move on to the next question on the quiz, which is, what is your shining candle? Which means one thing you love about the movie. So let's start with Masse. Masse, what is your shining candle for Ammonite?
I think the how Mary brights when she met Charlotte, how that character changed. Yeah, that's it. And also the doctor.
Oh, you like the doctor, the character?
No, just him.
You know what? I did like that character. I like that character very much, and we could go. Well, it will make this conversation too long. It was a brief character, but I was actually very curious why this doctor was portrayed so positively. It was like a lot of attention was paid to this male doctor in the movie, and it was
I was saying it before. It was the comparison between the male scientific and the women scientific. So how? Why? He was well behaved. He was, I don't know, all cleaned, very wise, well spoken. And she was not, no. Ah. All dirty hands. She was not even to have a proper bath. Because she was only like, doing the wiping.
She was very poor. Very humble. They lived very humble. Yeah.
No.
But a good shining candle. I like your shining candle. The character development of Marianne. I like that you bring this up. It's nice.
I agree with that. You can see it, and it's just thanks to Kate Winslet's acting. You can see her softening up. You can see her humanity a bit more. Yeah, for sure. All right, Gabby. What is your shining candle? One thing you loved.
My shining candle. I, for the first time in a long time, I struggled to find a shining candle in a film. But I'm going to go for there's one scene where both women that are at the beach, they have already found each other and they're kind of already in their relationship. And there is a sunny day and they're also watching some stones and doing their work. And all of a sudden, Mary stands up and decides to go for a swim. So she undresses and she goes in her white underwear. She goes into the beach. And then Charlotte does the same and she follows her into the beach. And I think that was the only scene when they gather they are in the water and Mary reaches out to Charlotte and grabs her and takes her clothes. And you see the sunset in the, okay, a little bit, you know, a little bit too kitschy. But I think that was the only moment where you saw that the two women were kind of being authentically kind and authentically caring for each other. So I think that moment was very, very beautiful. There was a nice scene. I like that one. Yes, Dennis, so it's now your turn.
Thank you for both of your shining candles. I appreciate them. My shining candle, I'm going to change it just now because I did take notes, but I'm going to change it. I appreciate it. My shining candle, I'm going to give it to the portrayal of Charlotte's depression and how she started to recover from it. I'm a survivor of, I'm starting this year, I'm calling myself a survivor of mental illness. I don't think you say that often, but I'm going to start saying it. I feel like I'm a survivor of a mental health illness, severe depression, and I appreciated that. She is severely depressed, and I like how she, like her condition was shown. You know, she was spending the whole day in bed. The maid will come in, and she's like, "Leave me alone." She was literally spending the day in bed, and that is very real. That's how it looks like. That's how it feels like. And I love how when she has a little breakthrough, that scene when she recover physically, she starts to recover physically and she finds the companionship of Mary. She finds some purpose. Just the companionship of another woman, the tenderness of another woman. We learn actually that she wanted to be closer to her husband physically and he was rejecting her. So she was needing this touch very much. And she starts to, you know, her spirit starts to lift, and they are two brilliant actresses. And I think this was portrayed well. I think how she starts to brighten up a little bit psychologically. I appreciated that because I know how it feels. And it's very much related to your physical body and to your, you know, how you relate to the world and other people. And just actually letting that, acknowledging that. Like when she fell on the floor with the coal and start crying, it's like she's saying, yes, I am depressed and I don't want to be depressed anymore. And that is very tough to admit. And she opened up, she let it happen. And that's very courageous. And it's a very important step in healing, in getting better. And I think that was portrayed well. I identify with that. So that's my shining candle. That was well written, well acted.
Very well, Nene. Thank you so much. This is also a very, very valid and also very valuable point to highlight in the discussion.
Yeah. It might not feel the same for everybody who's gone through depression, but I kind of identify with it. Okay, let's go with the next question in the quiz, which is stolen costume or prop. What piece of clothing or prop would you like to keep from the movie? Let's start with Masse.
None. Just because of the smell. I'm sorry. I had to say I would not keep any of those shoes, those blankets. Like, visually speaking, that would be another question. But visually speaking, the Charlotte's green dress that she wore for the recital, right? Like a musical. It was a violinist. I don't know. That piece of, like, that one, perfect. It was gorgeous. But keep for myself, I'm fine.
Thank you, Masi, for that. Yeah, it all happens in a sea town, right? So can you imagine? Everything smells like the ocean, fish, rocks, mud.
And body odors. No.
Yes. I'm fine. No. Masi, exactly. This was, you could feel like you were smelling exactly the sea water, the mud, the sand, the lack of, you know, and the pee. What did they have to show the pee? Why?
Yeah, exactly. Especially in a movie when then you're going to have
exactly.
Pee.
Please give me a break.
The association, exactly, because you see the pin, you cannot forget the pin when the scene is happening. It's like and especially since she only had a shower where he loved wash her arms and stuff, it's like you keep thinking, has she washed
herself? Happening.
And you know what this is, I have an important point to say here. Often historians and throughout history, you know, the way we look at the past is like people are savages, dirty, all these kinds of stuff, which is absolutely wrong. People did wash themselves. People were clean. People did take baths, et cetera, et cetera. People were clean. But the visual kind of associations that you get in this movie is like, oh, I don't know.
Thank you.
On top of that.
Yes.
On top of that, it was friggin' winter. So it was super cold. You didn't have water or a heater to warm up the water. So you'd rather
not wash.
Wash yourself, right?
Exactly.
So, no.
Exactly. Yeah. Very good.
On top of that, they only had like two or three dresses. So you can imagine that.
Well, Marianne was wearing the same dress pretty much the entire film, so, which is okay. We have talked about this before, and they wore undergarments, which is okay. But we see that the dress was not clean. Very good.
Very good point. Very good. Thank you, Masse. Okay, now, Gabby, what is your stolen costume or prop? What would you keep?
Well, Nene, you know me. I'm very indecisive. I have two little things that I would like to keep. Not a dress this time. I would like to keep the pair of boots that it's a pair of leather boots that they lent Charlotte to go on the walks, because as Masi mentioned, the husband of Charlotte hired Mary Anning or paid Mary Anning to take his wife on walks on the shore, on the beach, because he thought that it might it might help his wife to get better. And but of course, she's a noble lady, and she doesn't have the proper shoes to walk on the beach. So they, Mary Anning, I guess, she lends Charlotte a pair of leather boots, and I really like those beautiful pair of boots. I would take those, and it's just, you know, that I'm very bad at taking only one thing. I'm always taking more than one thing from every set of films that we discuss. I would like to take one of the little porcelain sheep that the mother of Mary Anning cleans many times through all the films. So the mother of Mary Anning is portrayed along the entire film, sitting in the kitchen like a ritual every day. She would clean six or seven pieces of porcelain with a little cloth, and she would clean them every day. And we learn throughout the story that these little porcelain figures, there are little sheep and some other figures as well, they represent her lost babies, because she had 8 kids and only 2 survived. So we learn that throughout the story. And there's one figure, one little sheep, that I would steal from the set. I think it was a beautiful piece.
Poor mom. Don't steal her sheep.
She's going to pass away.
She passed away anyhow.
Yeah, so
you are going to take care of that little porcelain sheep.
I'm
going to
take care of the sheep.
You know what? Actually, the thing with movies is that even if they are imperfect, because we have, it's kind of clear that we find this movie imperfect in many ways. But what you just said makes me think of how every work of art, like every piece of creation, has something worthy. And there's something very interesting, and I don't want to go too long, interesting between the work that Mary Anning does, which is cleaning these fossils and cleaning these bones and things, and the act of cleaning that her mom does. They want a clean world. They want to uncover things from dirt. I'm sure there's a symbolic parallel there in the movie that we could explore. It's quite beautiful, I think. Okay. For me, I'm going to choose not a prop, not a piece of clothing, even though I would probably keep the dress that Masse mentioned. I also find that spectacular. I'm going to keep something that you actually cannot keep. I just have to go somewhere to get it done. I want Charlotte's hairdo. I think, and we have talked about this in our podcast many times, some period films try to make their actors look more modern, more appealing to modern audiences by adapting the period hairdos into more modern ones, like letting their hair down, or just, you know, it's like they want to avoid making their actors look silly or, you know, just unattractive. And here, I think they did a really great hairdo for Charlotte. Like, I think it's very period appropriate. Like, she had the curls that fall down on the sides of her face. Very well done. And these curls come undone slowly, slowly, symbolic too of her liberation. I found that interesting, but I really love the hairdo. I think it was well done. And it really takes me to that time, very specific 1830s, late 1830s. So I will keep the hairdo. I appreciated that.
It's a nice idea, Nene. It's a beautiful thing.
Okay. Maybe I will. Somebody will make me a wig of that hairdo, and I'll take that.
Perfect.
Right. Okay. Okay. Moving on to the last question on the quiz. If given the chance, would you time travel to the period? Yes, no, and why? Masse, you can go first.
Mm-mm. No, definitely no.
Masse didn't even hesitate. Like,
just the fact of me knowing there is no vaccines, no medications, no nothing, just that, it just threw me out. I will not go. The farther that I go would be 1900s, and And just because penicillin was like kind of going on, there was some investigation happening on their surgery. There was an anesthetic happening as well. 1800, no, I'm fine.
I love that insight.
This is,
I'm fine.
Yeah, this is the doctor.
The doctor's view.
Massive doctor. This is the doctor's, this is the medical doctor scientific view of the past.
Not happening.
Thank you, Master, for that.
All the, like, just the fact of knowing that if you, for women, it was so horrifying, that period. It was just bad for us. Like, no mental health help, no maternity rates. It was horrifying. Everybody was dying back then. Nobody was taking care of you. Not even your husband. Your husband just dropped you with some stranger. Like, what the heck? That is outrageous.
Your baby died and your husband left you with another woman. I mean, what is this?
What is this? Mm-hmm.
No. No. Not happening.
Not happening. Not going.
Thank you, Masa. Thank you for that very clear-eyed perspective. Yeah, I know. I agree. I agree. Gabby, what about you? Given the chance, would you go through the time travel to appear? We didn't mention exactly the year, right? It's not mentioned specifically, or is it?
1800.
But you mentioned
late 1800.
You mentioned the age of
She died in 1847. She died quite young, 1847. So it must be late 1830s. It must be like 1838, 39, 40. It's not specified.
Okay, so this is a tricky one because I always answer my question, focus on that time and place of Earth where we would be beamed through time. And, you know, I would go to this time of history on another part of Earth, but maybe not on a fisher town on the coast of England. I think it would have been too tough, too rough, the climate. And I don't know. In this grayness that they portrayed in the film, it doesn't make it like an attractive time traveling offer. This time I would not.
No.
But you know, at the same time, we know that at the same time, Emily Bronte was a little bit further north, writing Wuthering Heights.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it's around the same time, so I'm torn because that I would go right away, but to this town in Southwest England, I don't know. It doesn't feel like very attractive to me. How about you, Nene? I'm biased.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. It's unattractive. If we're gonna go by the movie, how it's portraying a time and place, it made it completely unattractive on every level. It made it really hostile to women, to womanhood. So it's very unappealing to a modern person in every sense. Life must have been very difficult for everybody, men or women, on that coastal town. Marianne was quite poor. She worked all her life. I mean, the weather was rough. So I'm just thinking that the lives, you know, people found their happiness in their lives, obviously, and all life is worthy and every life is important. And I'm sure people found happiness, but it must have been a very rough life for people on those kind of fishing towns, including Marianne, who was very poor all her life and lived with her mom. I mean, it was a tough life. I agree. So it's not very appealing, and especially when you add in the hostility that the scientific community would have had for a woman doing work. She was completely erased. She was not taken into consideration. She was not mentioned in the papers. It makes it a really, really hard time for women in general. I would not go. But, you know, like we mentioned in a previous podcast, somewhere in Europe, Chopin was doing concerts Your son was writing novels and having amazing conversations with other writers in salons. So, yeah, I would not go to Lyme. I will go to France or somewhere else in the if I have
the
to
big
go
cities.
In time period. Yeah, the big cities. Yeah, yeah. You got it. You got it, Masa. Yeah, you got it because
okay.
Lyme was
I just
tough.
Googled this fact. I didn't know, but Annie died of breast cancer.
Oh my!
At the age of 47.
She was very young.
So it was very young, and her fossil work had held off during the last few years of her life because of her illness. And as some townspeople misinterpreted the effects of increasing doses of laudanin. So laudanin, it was like a kind of opioid. It was like a painkiller. So, of course, she was having breast cancer, and she was like, drinking that up, and people in the town, they were gossiping about her having a drinking problem.
Oh,
it's horrifying. This
is
horrifying.
It's terrible. It's pretty terrible.
47.
Yeah.
47.
She was very young because she was born in 1789.
Young.
Yeah. And she lived a hard, hard life.
You
she
want me to
life.
Go back? No, I'll have any.
No. All right. No. Well, we got into a kind of depressing point here in the discussion. And we didn't even talk about the performances, but maybe we can mention a little bit of this when we give our ratings. So we don't want to go on and on and on. So thank you very much, Gabby and Masa, for answering the quiz. Thank you, Masa, for that final fact that you just shared with us that made us even more depressed.
Like the movie.
Like the movie. So, finally, to wrap our discussion, let's do our Wicks and Candles rating. We didn't explain it during our previous season, so we are making a point of doing it right now. So it's an overall rating from 1 to 10, where 1 is a very sweaty wick, and 10 is all the shining wicks and candles. So let's start with Masa. Masa, how many wicks and candles you give Ammonite by Francis Lee?
I would give it 3, 3.5.
There you go.
I'm being very, very like thoughtful. And that's it. No, nothing more. I'm gonna rephrase the whole thing. 3.5 to Kate Winslet.
Okay.
Oh wow.
Just because she gets the 3.5 of the movie.
Oh the oh wow. Oh wow!
Just because
okay.
of her,
very interesting.
Saoirse doesn't get any points.
Sure, she was young.
She wore an ice cream dress. Okay, this is very interesting.
I'll give her the 0.5. I'll give her the 3.5 of the 3.
3.5, excellent. Okay, thank you, Masa. Thank you, Masa. So 3.5. 3.5 wicks and candles to Kay Winslet and Kay Winslet only. All right.
Yeah.
What about you, Gabby?
Nene, I'm going to give it a 6. I'm going to give it a 6. But funnily enough, one of the things that took away wicks and candles from my rating was exactly the performance of Kate Winslet. So I have to disagree with Masa on that. Because for the first time, Kate Winslet didn't really touch me as a viewer with her performance. And it's so sad because I've heard interviews of her about this film. She was so passionate and she was so happy with this project. And I didn't get it. I didn't really. And it's sad because it shouldn't be likable, you know, but I don't know. She was too gloomy, too bitter. So it was like a little turn off for me. What I liked about the film were more the technical aspects. I liked the music was very beautiful. They had a beautiful soundtrack. And the indoor, the heart, I think there was, you feel the roughness of the humbleness of this family. So you, and the kitchen, you know, the roughness of the wood and of the pan. So all the technical aspects were quite good. But yeah. I give it a 6. Okay. How about you?
Okay. Thank you, Gabby. And thank you, Marcy. I think I was gonna go with a 6 as well. And I'm going to go with a 6 because, like I said earlier, all works of art have some worth unless you had a you have a really foul intention in creating that piece of work. And I don't think the intentions here were bad. They were good intentions in creating this work. Obviously, amazing actresses, beautiful technical work. The cinematography is great. Like, the light in this movie is really beautiful. Is actually that scene that you describe in the beach is actually one of the most moving and beautiful scenes as well. The costumes won an award. The costumes are really, really amazing. And I think that's why I want to take the hairdo because I find it really wonderful. It is a 6 because I will, you know, because I agree with you. Kate Winslet didn't move me as a with the portrayal. It's a confused portrayal, and that's the problem I have because we have said this many times as well. You don't need to have likable characters, but they need to be coherent. They need to be. You need to see the reason why they are the way they are. Right? You have to understand how they came to be this way, and we don't really get that here. And you see the traces of humanity, like when she starts to kind of warm up to Mary, and there's a scene with Fiona Shaw, the amazing Fiona Shaw that we didn't mention. It's a small character. She has a beautiful scene. Kate Winslet has a beautiful scene with Fiona Shaw. There's beautiful acting here, but the character is not well written. I'm going to blame the script. And it's true because Kate Winslet was very involved with this project. Like you said, she choreographed the sex scene, the love scene, let's say, the let's call it a sex scene. She choreographed it. She was really excited for working with this filmmaker. But I think the script, I'm gonna blame it on the script because I think it was not clear in its intention
exactly
of what kind of story it wanted to tell. And the and what comes from that is the confusion of what these characters, who these people are. The ending for me was completely puzzling. Clumsy,
yeah, we're
puzzling.
Going back to the first question. What was the reason
yes.
of this directed? What? Like yeah. what he was trying to portray? What was the,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, that's the reason I'm giving it a 6. And I think we have made many points. I think when we review movies and talk about them, I think we need to be fair in our criticism. I hope we have been fair. We have explained all the reasoning why. It's not just like, I like it, don't like it. It's just, you know, there's the flaws that we have seen. And that's why, yeah, so... So how many total? Can somebody do the math? We have 12. We have 15 and a half.
0.5.
15.5 Wicks and Candles out of a total, possible total of 30. Okay.
Well, there you go.
This might be one of the lowest rated movies that we've done in the podcast, I think.
Yes, but... This is the beauty of sitting together and having a discussion, finding out what is it that makes a movie long lasting? What is it that makes a movie a milestone in cinematography? What is it that makes a movie special for the viewers? What is it that makes it a story to take you and swipe you by the feet? What is it? And we didn't find it here. So I think it's a fair discussion and it's a fair rating. There you go.
Yeah. There you go. Well, I want to thank you, Gabby, and I want to thank you, Masse, for taking the time to talk to us today. First of all, thank you for suggesting this movie, and you won fair and square. We pulled the name out of the hat. It was not.
I was the only one who won.
No.
We had many entries.
Meaning I was the only one who won in this discussion, not the director, not the movie.
We only win. Everybody lost. So thank you, Masse. Thank you, Gabby, for this discussion. I really enjoyed it. There's so much more we could say, but we need to wrap it up. Any final words, Masse or Gabby?
I want to thank Masse also for her input, her insights, her views. This is always so refreshing, and it added so much to our conversation. I'm extremely happy that it happened, that we made it work. And this will be an unforgettable episode for us. Thank you, Masse.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. This was amazing, and I hope we have enjoyed it so much. We hope you accept our invitation for another episode in the future.
I have a couple of suggestions.
Very well.
Very well.
But they're not movies. They're TV shows.
Okay, we're open.
Okay.
You have a lot of.
Yeah, we accept all and every suggestion.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with this, we're going to wrap it up, and we want to say thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you think of this movie in the comments when it comes out. And also, see you soon. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Wicks and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Wicks and Candles. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Mohen Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rollin. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D Minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.